Welcome back to the Word for Life radio ministry of Brookside Baptist Church. We call it Word for Life because it is the Word of God for your life. And we have just been sharing some biblical principles concerning stewardship in relationship to your life. I'm Pastor Greg Huffman, counseling pastor and senior citizens pastor at Brookside Baptist. And with me in the studio for the last few times has been Pastor Joe Helm. And he's been sharing some principles of planning and stewardship, and we've now reached the point that we need to talk about how my assets are going to be distributed after I've gone to be with the Lord. So, Pastor Joe, share with us some thoughts that we need to take in consideration.
Sure. One of the caveats that I have to give, of course, is that this area of the law can be quite comprehensive and complicated to a degree, and so therefore, I'm not trying to give legal advice to anybody out there listening, but they need to consult with their own personal advisor, because every family and every individual circumstances are different, and different laws might apply that I'm not aware of, you know, not knowing their circumstance. And so very, very important to make sure that you understand I'm speaking only in generalities here out of necessity. But let's talk about the idea and the concept that when a person dies, the assets that they own, now, of course, spiritually speaking, we know that God has loaned it to them, so to speak. But from an earthly perspective, there's an ownership issue here in a private property system like we have in our country. That is, you might have the title deed to your home, to a piece of real estate or a condominium. You have the ownership of a bank account. You go down to the bank and they have in their records that the owner of this account is John Smith, let's say. Or you have a life insurance policy with XYZ Life Insurance Company, and you've paid premiums, you own it. Well, the issue is, the fundamental starting issue is, when you die, how does the ownership of that particular asset get changed to living people? Because we can't just let the house sit there and rot. We're going to transfer the ownership deed of that house to somebody who's alive, who's going to move in there and live there, right? Is kind of the idea.
Right.
Or the bank account has to be transferred, or the life insurance money has to be given to someone. How does that happen? Well, it really happens in basically one of three ways. Either it's two people that own it, like a husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
One of them dies, and the law simply says if it was owned as joint ownership, the ownership will result in a surviving second person. And so when one person dies, the second person, husband or wife, shows a death certificate to the bank, to the register of deeds through a particular special little form, and it results in the single now surviving spouse owns it. It's really that simple.
Right.
The other option would be a beneficiary designation. So this would be very common on a life insurance policy, an IRA, 401k, these types of assets, annuity. You're allowed to put a beneficiary on there. Now, there are certain exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, if you die then, the beneficiary is going to get that asset without probate. Now, again, there's exceptions to that.
Right.
That would become clear on a personal consultation. The third and really only other way that it happens without the probate court, because if it's not joint, if it's not beneficiaried right, or if it doesn't go through a trust document, that's the third option for avoiding probate, a trust document. If you don't have a joint, you don't have a beneficiary, or you don't have a trust document, it goes to probate.
Okay.
And probate court is, again, the local county court that has set up an administrative process whereby the assets of the deceased person get collected and declared now owned by living people.
Mm-hmm.
And it results in a court order that comes out, and it tells the bank, you've got an account for the deceased John Doe. That account is now hereby declared to be owned by so-and-so. And so that's simplistic, but it's really what happens. So in other words, the goal is that I need to do the techniques that are right for me or my family ahead of time, before I die, so that the transition of the ownership of those assets go the way I want them to go and to who I want them to go.
Right.
Privately, without the expense, the red tape, and the bureaucracy of the system. And again, joint ownership can be used, but the problem with that is it only works when the first one dies. When the second one later dies, if they have not done a different technique,
correct,
then there's going to be probate. The other problem is, and this is why we can get into a lot of different subjects here, because it really starts to fan off into many subjects, but another problem that husbands and wives don't realize either is that there can be significant tax consequences. In, take, for example, one spouse dies, and the survivor spouse says, wow, that was great. We owned everything in joint, so I should just put everything in joint with my children. That's kind of a logical layman's conclusion by maybe an elderly mom or dad, but there can be significant tax consequences in doing that. One simple example would be with maybe some mutual fund shares or shares of stock or a family home or a cottage up north or one of these assets that we generally call capital assets. That simply means that the growth of that asset over a number of years of time creates a capital gain.
Sure.
That means that there's some profit held in there that is just kind of waiting to be taxed by the government if you're not careful and if you do something wrong.
Called a capital gains tax.
Yeah, exactly. And so basically what we have is the idea that, so let's take, for example, we've got an elderly mom who her husband died a number of years ago. Mom now is elderly. She owns a home. And in that home, over the number of years, the value of the home has gone up, and so there's this capital gain in there, this profit waiting to be potentially taxed. Well, if she dies as the sole owner, the government, through the IRS, gives what's called a step-up in basis. That just is a technical way to say they forgive the capital gain.
Oh, cool.
Hard to believe, but it happens. And so if mom dies, she's the sole owner, the capital gain gets forgiven. The children then get the house and they can sell it without tax. The problem is if mom takes some backseat estate planning advice from the guy down the street and she changes the ownership on the house to her and her three children as joint owners, and then she dies, yes, it avoids probate, but then you only get the capital gain forgiveness to the percent degree of her ownership. And so 25% in that example is the amount of the capital gain forgiveness. And so now the children have to pay capital gain tax on three-quarters of the gain. And so that's just a real quick example of any number of problems that can come up in estate planning so that you need a planner who can really spot all these issues and know which ones to use for you in the most comprehensive way that's going to benefit you and your family.
When you're talking about benefit you and your family, any of the taxes you don't have to pay can go to be a blessing to the family. We also mentioned a couple of times ago, it could also possibly go and be a blessing to your church.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, certainly we would encourage that everyone recognize that, you know, of course, Proverbs says to honor the Lord with your substance. And I believe that means while you're alive, while you have that substance under your control, you honor God with the way you use it.
Right.
But then it also says with the first fruits of all your increase. And certainly no greater increase than going to heaven. And, and as well as the increases that often occur with death that never, you never got to honor the Lord with during your life. Like life insurance or retirement funds. Or the capital gain on a home.
Right.
Number of different things you could look at there. Well, in your estate plan, you could leave a legacy and a testimony to your family what you consider to be the most important thing in your life.
Value that you hold to be extremely high is seen then in those documents.
Absolutely. That you give the Lord the first fruits. And it's just a wonderful testimony that you could leave your family and your children. The other thing to note is that there's other estate planning techniques that are available as well, where you can actually give practically the same amount of money on your death to your children and yet provide for the Lord's work and it really not cost anything because the way the government structured the tax laws, we could actually take money that otherwise would have went to the government in taxes and simply give it to the Lord's work.
There you go.
And so very, very exciting, the different techniques that are available. And what you can accomplish with basically doing appropriate planning.
And so the idea of being a good steward goes all the way to the documents that will talk about the distribution of your possessions and your wealth.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad we're having this discussion today, Pastor Joe, because just this last week, I finally put together a list of all of our insurance policies and different possessions and where we have bank accounts and all these kinds of things, and emailed them to my oldest son. And I feel so relieved, so that somebody now knows where everything is and what everything is. And I feel like that's a part of the stewardship that I think all of us need to be involved in. It's something that I was putting off for several years, thinking, well, you know, I'm not about ready to die, but I have no clue when I'm going to be ready to die.
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the practical aspects of stewardship in the last several programs and did not spend a lot of time on the spiritual issues involved. But the counterpart to stewardship would be covetousness.
Oh, wow, yes.
And, of course, we know what the scripture warns about covetousness. And there's a quote here I'd like to read that just kind of sums it all up in my mind. It says, "The sin of covetousness is very common, but very few will confess it. For when a man heaps up gold in his heart, the dust of it blows in his eyes, and he cannot see his own fault."
Whoa.
And it's always been, I keep that in the flyleaf of my Bible.
Sure.
Just to remind me of the deceptiveness of riches and the deceitfulness of covetousness and greed and thinking that getting gain is godliness. Paul talks about that to Timothy in 1 Timothy 6, when Paul comes back and says, no, that's not the case. It's godliness with contentment
is the gain. And the amazing thing, Pastor Joe, is the fact that so many times in lists of horrible sins, right in the middle of that list is covetousness.
Yeah. Yeah, the love of money. Not money.
Right.
The love of money is the root of all evil. It's the seed from which grows all sorts of evil.
Because if we love money, we cannot be loving God. And I think that's what Jesus was saying. You cannot love God and mammon. One of them is going to be your master.
Yeah, and I think we need to take the Lord's admonition that while we have time and opportunity, that with the material things that he entrusts to our care, that we need to use them in such a way that we, quote, make friends for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
That when we fail, when we die, when we leave this earth, we will be welcomed into the tents that never perish by these friends, so to speak, that we won through the use and wise, sacrificial use of the material things God has given.
And the three verses that close out that parable are Luke 16, verses 10 to 12, and it basically says, if you have been unfaithful with the unrighteous mammon, with the money, then who will commit to you true riches? Who will trust you with true riches? And obviously, true riches are what we want to end this life with. So, yes, we die, but then our works do follow us. And I trust that as we come to the end of this broadcast, we'll remember that righteous works should follow every one of God's righteous children. Until next time, may the Lord bless you in a fantastic way.